Oh, good afternoon. Does everybody know everybody here?
No.
I don't think so.
Ellie? Judy?
Ron?
Edith?
Karen?
Wendy?
And Carolyn?
Good to see you. I've been reading a book that my son sent me. It's a big surprise for no reason at all. The verses that the nuns in Buddha's time wrote are expressed and were saved. They come in a beautiful little, it smells so good, that book. And it's just the right size, and it has Pali on one side and English on the other side. And a great many of them were students of Mahapajapati. So when we recite Mahapajapati as one of the first woman ancestor, she immediately took on all the people in her world and a sangha was created around her connection with Buddha. And of course they became teachers, and then that connection became wider and wider until all the way up to here. Here we all are. It's quite marvelous to think about. I feel a lot of times that our practice is sort of isolated. It's on the edges of our culture and our community. It's a little peculiar thing to do in many people's eyes. And so it's wonderful to think how it fits. And it fits in such a broad, deep way. And even though I don't imagine that Zen is going to be a great success in America for a long time, even so, I think it's having a tremendous effect. And not the effect of Zen perfume or Zen motorcycles, but just people being aware that meditation is an option and that it's possible. That it's possible to sit, it's possible to change your life. It always seems odd to me how hard it seems for people to want to change their life, want to and not want to at the same time. People talk to me about what I do, and I tell them, and they say, oh, I would love to do meditation, but I'm much too busy. I'm so nervous, I could really use it, but I can't do that. My brain just goes all the time. I say, yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Come and sit down with your brain. Come and enjoy your brain for a minute. It's so hard to do. Diana Deering sent me, she sits with a group up in Seattle, I think. The teacher's name is Genjo. There are a lot of Genjos in this world. I don't know this teacher, but he gave a talk on this nun didn't appear in the Theragata. She's not one of the ones who lived in it in the time that those poems were collected. But this is a very famous story about another nun who's Bada Kundalakesa, who is a Jain. I always think of Jains as walking with a brush, a broom. They walk and they sweep in front of them so they don't crush any little animal. They try very hard not to kill anything, no matter how small. Their teaching is very much like Buddha's, only more extreme, more, well, extreme is a good enough word. And Bada Kundalakesa was a wandering teacher of Jain. There's still a Jain temple here in San Jose. So that has come all the way down through the centuries. Also, I met some of them about a year ago. So Bada Kundalakesa was a wandering Jain ascetic, famous for her debating skills. Whenever she came to a new place, she set up a branch of rose apple on the ground and put out the word that whoever wished to debate should trample the branch. When she was 70 years old, she came to Savatthi, and Buddha's disciple, Shariputra, came forward to engage her in a public debate. Now, this seems really strange because Shariputra seems like a figure in a book. Doesn't seem real. But his grave still exists in India, and you can go and visit it. He was real. And he was a teacher. And he practiced and followed Buddha. So she asked, Shariputra came forward to engage her in a public debate. First she asked a series of philosophical questions of Shariputra, and he was able to answer all of them. Then he said, "You have asked many questions. I would like to ask only one." She said, "Please ask, Venerable One." He asked, "One, what is that?" She was unable to answer. He said, "If you don't even know that, how could you know anything else?" And began to teach her the Dharma. She was so moved by the teachings that she fell at his feet and asked to take refuge with him. But instead he told her to come and meet Buddha. The Buddha recognized her spiritual maturity and said to her, "One phrase that brings peace is better than 1,000 words that have no use." When she heard these words, she was freed and became an arhat. Then the Buddha ordained her, saying simply, "Bada, come." In the collection of essays that women wrote about practice, one of the teachers wrote about that Bada come. we create something of a fuss around ordination usually. But there are times when only a few words are necessary. Once a few words have done the work that they can do. And though she'd spent her whole life up until the age of 70 in talking and talking, it was a tremendous relief to be subdued by a word. This kind of subduing and quieting in my experience is not a one-time thing. In the story, she becomes an arhat, means she's crossed the river and she's on her way. But day after day and month after month and year after year, there's a continual opportunity and call and need for a return to faith, a return to the most simple place, to go home again, as we say. The first time we take the precepts, it's returning to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha first, returning home. But as you know, we take the precepts over and over again, and each time it's an opportunity. An opportunity and a way to fall down at the feet of Shariputra or the feet of Buddha. All the great teachers spoke about how we begin again and again. We're never done. And though we might think we get it, in the end there's nothing to get. It's just one. And it's not even one. In Zen we say not one, not two. We can't say. And one way of thinking of that subduing of the mind, if you will, or the returning to faith mind, is just that one word of Buddha's, come. It's not about going somewhere. It's not about being something or doing something. It's just about come. There aren't that many stories about women. Though they're being dug up now more and more. And many of them are about the most simple things. about being allowed to be simple. They have the little song in the back room. It's a gift to be simple. And I think that's what we inherit with this practice, in which so many of us were encouraged by Coben to that faith mind, the stepping down mind, the simple, no ambition mind, the simply be where we are for everyone. So Genjo does a real long Dharma talk on this little story. I can't do a real long Dharma talk. So I think that's enough. Are there questions?
What was the phrase, one word of peace is worth more than a thousand?
A thousand words, I think.
Phrases.
One phrase that brings peace is better than a thousand words that have no use. Yeah. So that's a big study all itself. What is right speech? How do we know when we're just chattering and when is the real word coming out? Sometimes it's tricky. Especially, I think, in ordinary everyday life when we want to engage. And so as soon as we're engaged, then we're in conversation in some way. And then it's hard to know how to navigate through the cloud of words that we both generate as two people talking. I always think if we talk from the belly rather than from the head, that it works better. But in the Zendo, we can talk from the belly. It's harder out on El Camino Real or the Alameda. Possible, though.
I was thinking this morning about the part of the Heart Sutra where it says all Buddhas depend on Prajnaparamita and attain unsurpassed complete perfect enlightenment. And at first I was thinking, I know we probably this would be more appropriate for a discussion of the Heart Sutra, but if they're enlightened, why do they need to attain, if they're already Buddhas, why do they need to attain enlightenment? And just as you were talking here about returning over and over and over again, I think that was kind of my answer, that they return over and over again to enlightenment. It's not, as you said in the past, it's not a permanent, fixed state that they attained. Or is it? I mean,
in one sense, it is. It is already. And in another sense, it's a continual practice.
As we're talking now, as you're talking about renewing over and over again.
Yes.
Well, and I understand what you're saying, and I think in the background, everything is already enlightened.
Kogan says, it's like putting a cup on the floor, and the floor and the cup completely fit.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing in between. They're just right there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as close as I think we can get to what that means, that attain.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean getting something. It means just embodying the connection.
Manifesting,
maybe, or embodying. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a funny phrase that depend on is, we do depend on the floor very much.
Mm-hmm.
But as Dogen always said, as we sit, we are. But that itself is enlightenment. But sitters are Buddha. Though they don't know it and shouldn't even bother about thinking about it. So forget about it,
right?
Okay.
I'll
set
on the tape.
I can erase it.